content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Larry Wilson for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Kiplinger's magazine, also AARP Bulletin, and the AARP magazine. Get a head start on your 2022 taxes. This article, appearing in Kiplinger's August 2022 edition, by Rocky Mingle and Joy Taylor. With the 2021 tax season barely over, you probably don't want to start thinking about next year's return. But armed with your recent returns is now a good time to make sure you're up to speed on new tax law changes and updates for the 2022 tax year. Most of the tax breaks in the American Rescue Plan Act expired at the end of 2021. As a result, some popular tax breaks are different for the 2022 tax year than they were for 2021. Other 2022 tweaks are the result of new rules or annual inflation adjustments. For example, the child tax credit reverts to its pre-2021 form for the 2022 tax year and drops back down to $2,000 per child. And children who are 17 years old don't qualify for the credit this year because the former age limit, 16 years old, returns. Other highlights: long-term capital gain tax rate. Tax rates on long-term capital gains, that is, gains from the sale of capital assets held for at least 1 year, and qualified dividends, did not change for 2022. However, the income thresholds to qualify for the various rates were adjusted for inflation. In 2022, the 0% rate applies for individual taxpayers with taxable income up to $41,675 on single returns and $83,350 for joint returns. The 20% rate for 2022 starts at $459,751 for singles and $517,201 for couples filing jointly. The 3.8% surtax on net investment incomes stays the same for 2022. It kicks in for single people with modified adjusted gross income of more than $200,000. And for joint filers with modified AGI above $250,000. Standard deduction. The standard deduction amounts were increased for 2022 to account for inflation. Married couples get $25,900 plus $1,400 for each spouse age 60 or older. Singles can claim a $12,950 standard deduction or $14,700 if they're at least 65 years of age. PayPal and Venmo reporting. Starting with the 2022 tax year, third-party payment settlement networks, for example, PayPal and Venmo, will send you a Form 1099-K if you are paid more than $600 during the year for goods or services, regardless of the number of transactions. Previously, the form was sent only if you received more than $20,000 in gross payments and had more than 200 transactions. However, 1099-K reporting is only for money received for goods and services, not for payments from family and friends. Charitable deductions. The above-the-line deduction for up to $300,000 of charitable cash contributions $600 for a married couple filing a joint return, expired at the end of 2021. You will have to itemize deductions to write off gifts to charities. Retirement savings. Many key dollar limits on retirement plans and IRAs are higher in 2022. For example, the maximum contribution limits for 401k, 403b, and 457 plans jumped from $19,500 to $20,500 for 2022, while people born before 1973 can put in $6,500 more as a catch-up contribution. The 2022 cap on contributions to simple IRAs is $14,000, plus an extra $3,000 if you're age 50 and up. The 2022 contribution limit for a traditional IRAs and Roth IRAs stays steady at $6,000, plus a $1,000 catch-up contribution for individuals age 50 and up. However, the income ceilings on Roth IRA contributions went up. Contributions phase out at AGI of $204,000 to $214,000 for couples and $129,000 to $144,000 for singles. Deduction phase-outs for traditional IRAs also start at higher levels in 2022, from an AGI of $68,000 to $78,000 for single filers and $109,000 to $129,000 for couples. If only one spouse is covered by a workplace retirement plan, the phase-out zone for deducting a contribution for the uncovered spouse starts at an AGI of $204,000 and ends at $214,000. More lower-income people may be able to claim the saver's credit in 2022 as well. This tax break can be worth up to $1,000, $2,000 for joint filers, but you must contribute to a retirement account and your AGI must be below certain thresholds, $34,000 for single filers and married people filing a separate return, $65,000 for married couples filing jointly, and $51,000 for head of household filers. Estate and gift taxes. For 2022, the lifetime estate and gift tax jumped from $11.7 million to $12.06 million. $24.12 million for couples if portability is elected by timely filing IRS Form 706 after the death of the first-to-die spouse. Finally, you can give up to $16,000 or $32,000 if your spouse agrees to each child, grandchild, or any other person in 2022 without having to file a gift tax return or tap your lifetime exemption. If you need to adjust withholding from your paycheck, visit irs.gov and search for Form W-4. File the form with your employer. The site's tax withholding estimator can help. The next article is Get a Handle on Your Credit Card Debt. This article appeared in Kiplinger's August 2022 edition and is written by Emma Patch. Revolving credit, which includes credit cards, surged by 21.4% in March, according to the Federal Reserve. But at the same time that credit card debts are growing, rising interest rates have made carrying a balance more expensive. After 2 years of pandemic-related restrictions, I understand the urge to spend more on experiences and make up for lost time. I pay my credit card in full every month, and I have never carried a balance. However, I know that's not the case for many millennials. If you're carrying a credit card debt, consider these strategies to eliminate or reduce what you owe before it's too late. Take stock of your debt. If you have balances on multiple credit cards, make a list that shows how much you owe on each card. the interest rate, and the minimum monthly payment for each. A spreadsheet provides a handy way to update your progress, but pen and paper work just as well. If you have a good credit score, a balance transfer could help you get out from under your debt. Many banks offer balance transfer cards for new customers that come with an introductory 0% annual percentage rate for a limited amount of time, anywhere from 12 to 21 months, depending on the card. To avoid interest, pay off the balance before the introductory rate expires. Note that if you cancel your old card and the balance transfer card has a lower credit limit, it could affect your credit utilization ratio, the amount of your outstanding card balances reflected as a percentage of your card limits, which could lower your credit score, says Jerry Detweiler, author of The Ultimate Credit Handbook. This strategy only works if you resist the temptation to use the balance transfer card to make new purchases, says Beverly Harzog, credit expert and author of The Confessions of a Credit Junkie. You want to use the card to get out of debt? Not add to it, she says. If your credit score isn't high enough to meet the criteria for a 0% introductory rate on a balance transfer card, you may qualify for a card with an introductory APR that's lower than your current card rate. Another option is a debt consolidation loan from a bank or credit union with a rate that's lower than the rate you're paying on your high-interest credit cards. Payoff strategies. When you have balances on multiple credit cards, there are three approaches you can use to tackle the debt. The first is the avalanche approach. Begin with your cards that have the highest interest rate and the highest balances. Make the minimum payments on the lower interest cards while devoting the rest of available funds to the high interest cards. While the avalanche approach makes the most sense from a mathematical point of view, some people choose the snowball approach, paying off the low balance debts first. Paying off your low balance cards may give you the motivation you need to pay off all of your debts, even if it costs you more in interest. Finally, there's the blizzard approach, in which you start with the snowball and move to the avalanche. Begin by paying off one low balance card so you have one success under your belt. Then move on to those with higher rates. Paying off your balances will make it difficult to save, but try to put aside enough in an emergency fund to cover 3 months' worth of expenses. When you've paid off your debts, you can ramp up your savings so you'll be prepared for unexpected expenses, which will reduce the risk of falling back into debt. Your next important retirement decisions. This article appeared in the AARP publication. Pension or lump sum? How much risk? Experts weigh in. Question: I'm about to retire and I'm due a pension. Should I choose a traditional pension or take it as lump sum? The answer: to answer that question, you have to weigh the long-term security of a monthly pension against the allure of a large amount of money that may not be around as long as you are. A lump sum payment is like Adam contemplating eating an apple in the Garden of Eden. It may look really good and yummy, but there are always consequences, says Karen Friedman, executive director of the nonprofit Pension Rights Center. To start, you can be shortchanged by taking a lump sum, says Friedman, because of how the payment is calculated. You might also run through the money quickly. A 2017 MetLife study found that 20% of people who took a lump sum from their retirement account, either a pension or a 401k plan, used up the money within 5 years. Another factor to consider is the survivor benefit that a traditional pension plan usually offers. A guarantee that a worker's spouse will continue to receive lifetime income if the worker dies first. But that benefit disappears if you opt for a lump sum. It should be a decision made by both partners in a marriage, says Friedman. A lump sum can make sense if you're ailing and don't expect to live long. Again, you might have to weigh the needs of a spouse. It can also be a good choice if you already have plenty of savings. Maybe you don't need a pension's steady income, and maybe you rather spend it or leave it for your heirs. Some people want to guarantee income and not have to worry about what the markets do, versus others who are willing to accept some volatility in the market for that higher rate of return, says James Lee, a financial planner in Saratoga Springs, New York. Although you might want to take a lump sum because you're afraid your company may go bust, that shouldn't be a worry for most employees in the private sector. The Federal Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation ensures private pension plans protecting, for example, up to about $5,600 a month for someone taking a joint and 50% survivor pension starting at age 65. But multiple employer pension plans, which cover workers at more than one company, have weaker protections. Plus, some pensions aren't insured by the PBGC at all, such as plans from the government, religious institutions, and some small businesses. Question 2. I'm retiring, and I'm moving my 401k into an IRA. How aggressive should I be with my investments? Much of the answer depends on whether you need to draw on that money now for living expenses. The sooner you're tapping your portfolio, the more conservative you should be. But the answer also depends on your tolerance for risk, says Camilla Elliott, a financial planner in Atlanta. Consider how you reacted to the market downturns in 2020 and 2007 to 2009. If you were inclined to sell, then you may have a low risk tolerance, she says. The size of your portfolio matters too. If you're confident you have more than enough to live on over the next 30 years or so, you may be comfortable taking more risk. If you need the money soon or are adverse to risk, invest no more than 60% in stocks with the balance of your money in bonds, Elliott recommends. If you've got more resources and breathing room, you can have as much as 75% in stocks. Historically, stocks are the best hedge against inflation, she says. Elliott also recommends retirees have at least 6 months of spending needs in cash or short-term bonds. Even though the market can go up and down, the cash for your immediate needs is not going to be at risk. The next question. I have investments spread out among a 401k, an IRA, and a non-retirement brokerage account. Which should I pull money from to live on? Generally speaking, you want to keep your tax advantaged in investments compounding for as long as possible, says Mark Wilson, a financial planner in Irvine, California. This means first tapping your taxable accounts, the ones that are with brokerages or mutual fund companies, but aren't inside a 401k or an IRA. Then you tap your tax-deferred accounts, a 401k or traditional IRA, and finally a Roth IRA if you have one. That approach has the advantage of simplicity, but if you are willing to give your calculator a bit of a workout, you may be able to do a little better by pulling strategically from your different accounts in a way that maintains lower tax brackets, says Wilson. Consider the three ways retirement accounts are taxed: distributions from traditional IRAs and 401ks are typically taxed at ordinary income rates, which in 2022 is 12% for singles with income below $41,776, and for married couples with income below $83,551. After that, additional income is taxed at 22%. Withdrawals from a taxable brokerage account, meanwhile, are subject to capital gains tax on profits, which is 0% in roughly those same income ranges. After that, the rate bumps up to 15%. Roth IRA withdrawals are completely tax-free. So during a tax year with little income, pulling some money from a traditional IRA or 401k may make sense, provided you stay in a low tax bracket, says Wilson. You might also pull additional dollars from a taxable account, keeping an eye on that capital gains return. For many retirees with investment portfolios, the years that offer the most flexibility around withdrawal choices tend to be the years before they take Social Security and before they turn age 72, which is the age which the IRA says you have to start taking withdrawals, known as required minimum distributions, from traditional IRAs and from most 401ks. Is it time to sell your house? This article appeared in the AARP Bulletin, June 2022, by Linda Stern. Some people I know are playing a new game of sorts, going on a real estate website every few weeks to see how much the estimated value of their house has risen. Some homes have surged for 2 years now. The average increase over that time is above 30%. And the gains kept coming this spring. Those of us who have owned our homes for years can probably find a buyer easily and net a lot of cash for our retirement. So should we take the money and run? If the market craters later on, maybe we'll be sorry we didn't sell now. But then, where to live next? That is the crux of the dialogue playing out now at our kitchen tables. People are looking at prices as the reason to sell. But they have questions about where they're going to go, says Linda Shalinsky, an agent who works in Washington, D.C. metro area. There is not a lot of choice out there now. There are good reasons to sell right now, but it may still be a wrong time to make the right move. Let's break it down. Catching the top. The one thing that you should absolutely not do is to try to time the market, says Rachel Elson, a financial advisor with Paragon Wealth Management in San Francisco, where the market is hot, hot, hot. If you sell thinking that you're going to hit the market top and rent until house prices fall, you might end up renting for life because home prices continue to rise while you are out of the market. That's what happened to an acquaintance of Elson's who sold his home a few years ago. He's still renting. Nobody really knows or should try to predict where the housing market is headed. Higher mortgage rates, which were rising sharply in March and April, could dampen housing prices or have little effect. One thing not to plan on is a relapse of the sickness that sent home prices down 21% between 2006 and 2011. Before that crash, the housing market had been propped up by mortgage lenders offering zero documentation, zero down payment mortgages to anyone and everyone. The situation is very different now, says Joel Kahn, Associate Vice President for Economic and Industry Forecasting for the Mortgage Bankers Association. Households have a lot of savings. The bulk of home buyers are putting down decent down payments. There's no big subprime market like we saw in the early 2000s, and mortgage delinquencies are down sharply. All of that makes a housing debacle far less likely than it was in 2006. After the sale, another crucial part of deciding whether to sell, figuring out where you're going to go next. If you still love living in your home, and then you don't want to give up your neighborhood, and have thought about what your next stage would be, stay put. While your house has risen in value, so have all the other homes in your neighborhood. By the time you sell your home, move to a smaller one, and fix it up a little, you may be disappointed at how little money you actually walk away with, Elson says. But if you have already been mulling a move to a cheaper region, to be nearer to your kids, to life with fewer staircases, now could be a great time to sell and buy so the market doesn't slip away from you. Now is also a good time to sell if you don't have much savings and need the equity from your home to fund your retirement, Elson says. You can do away with property taxes and maintenance and extract the equity and invest it and live on it, she says. But she adds, you have to get comfortable with renting. Not sure what to do next? It's never too early to start exploring the market and to see what else is out there for you. And Chalinsky suggests you might start on the clean out and home improvements that will make selling your home easier once you're ready. It's always the right time for that. And our last article this evening, Social Security Outlook Less Dismal. And this article appeared in the Kiplinger August 2022 report. The financial health of Social Security and Medicare was buoyed a bit by the strong post-pandemic economic recovery, according to the latest reports from the Social Security and Medicare trustees released in early June. The dire outlook for Social Security overall hasn't changed, and the Social Security Old Age and Survivors Insurance Trust Fund, which pays retiree benefits, will be depleted next decade unless Congress acts to shore it up, which it is widely expected to do so. But a few bright spots from amidst the gloom. The trust fund is now expected to run dry in 2034, and 1 year later than previously projected. At that time, incoming tax revenue will be enough to cover only 77% of scheduled benefits. Also, the disability fund, for the first time since 1983, is no longer expected to be depleted within the 75-year projection period. On the bright spot for retirees, the report predicted a 3.8% cost of living adjustment for 2023, but that was based on mid-February inflation projections. Now, says Social Security Chief Actuary Stephen Goss, the COLA could be closer to 8% as determined by inflation in July, August, and September. Medicare trustees are projecting no Medicare premium increase for 2023 and possibly a slight decrease. We have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Larry Wilson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org.